to another episode of Meeting Pros. I'm your host, Kevin Finn, and today we have a great show. We have our first guest has come back on as well, but Jessica, how have you been doing? How's Ruby?
Ruby is great. She had her first solo flight with Dad last night while I was at the Business Radio X networking event.
Which went really well. We had 140 people show up.
Yes, it was awesome.
Everyone had a good time, and I couldn't go to the bar and grab a drink without having to run in with 10
somebody.
People.
Somebody, yeah. Yeah, and it was my first night out since I'd had the baby. So even though it was work, it was like, woohoo, I'm out.
Party.
So it was great.
Definitely. Well, how about you introduce our guest to all our listeners out there? And we got Tim Burkesh back, our first guest, and now he's come back.
Yeah, he was on our very first show over a year ago now.
We didn't scare him off.
I know. He's actually become a pretty big fan. I appreciate all of his attention on Facebook. He's always supporting eventrepreneurs and such. So today we have Katie Snyder with Katie Snyder Photography, and we're going to start the show with Tim Burkesh of Vector Displays.
Perfect. Well, Tim, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. I was glad to be invited back and glad to be here.
Definitely. Well, we've been doing the show over a year now, and we had to have you back. And I just want to check in for our listeners that didn't hear the first show for whatever reason. What you do over at Vector Displays, and what you guys been up to recently?
All right. Well, Vector Displays is a full-service event and trade show company. We do everything from designing booths and exhibits and building them and delivering them and taking them up and putting them down and shipping them to the next place and refurbishing and anything to do pretty much with trade shows and events, both indoor and outdoor.
Definitely. So what's the biggest draw? How did you get into this game and what keeps you at it?
Well, I got involved, 15, 20 years ago, more than that, really, when I got involved, I was a consultant for sales and sales management, and we found a real issue with people on the show floor not knowing what to do. You'd think it's natural what you're going to do when you're on the show floor, but we were amazed at how people did not interact with potential customers, with prospects, things like that. So I got it from the training side, and then we saw, well, there's really more to this than just being involved with the training side. We also have to do work with contacting people and prospects ahead of time, inviting them to the booth, those kinds of issues. And then it just got involved and into the whole doing everything.
Definitely.
And so kind of got sucked into it that way. What's nice about it is every day is different. We could put up the same booth every day at a different venue, and it's all new because there are so many factors involved in doing that it makes it brand new. And so there's never a dull moment.
Well, definitely. So you guys offer a turnkey sort of solution for these kind of people also, don't you?
Yes, that's one thing we do offer. It's we have skewed our website for an international business. So we have a lot of international businesses that call or email, especially since there's a language barrier, since I only speak one, and one not very well. So we have a language barrier, and so we get a lot of emails in of companies that are coming to various venues throughout the country, and they need a booth for a one-time thing or maybe two- or three-time thing. So they don't want to, and they don't need to, really learn how our American system of exhibits is.
Yeah.
It's different than anywhere else in the world, of course. And it can be very confusing. And so what we do is offer, look, we will provide you the whole thing. All you have to do is come in on the day of the show, put your literature out. We'll even do that for them if they'll send it ahead of time, and have your people there and begin talking to people who walk by the show. And
yeah, that's the key. It would be a shame to put that much money and attention into an event and then just sit behind the table and wait for people to come and engage you, because that's the big loss in these trade shows.
It's amazing. It's amazing when I see people sitting at the back, and especially with smartphones, everybody's looking at their phone, they're eating, they're And some people almost feel bad about walking up to them
because
they're doing something.
Yeah, and it's the same in a restaurant. If the hostess looks disengaged in her job, you're like, okay, I'll go over here.
Don't mean to bother you.
Right.
Exactly.
And you're right. The amount of money spent is incredible, and the booth is expensive.
Yeah.
But when you look at the space they buy, when you look at the travel, the hotel rooms, the meals,
it's exponential.
All the money. And the booth is just nothing, and then they don't get any return on their investment.
And they wonder why.
Yeah. We have no new prospects. So it's mind-boggling. Another area is the whole installation. As a matter of fact, I've got one client, and they probably won't be listening because they're at the trade show right now downtown. They came from out of town. They wanted us to take down the booth, and I said, well, you know, we'd be happy to put it up. Oh no, we'll do it ourselves. Well, here we got the president of the company and the director of marketing putting up their booth. I'm thinking maybe you could use your time, I don't know, talking to customers or prospects and maybe urging them to come to the booth.
Yeah.
You know, what do I know? So we'll take it down tomorrow, and they'll be happy, and we'll be happy. And I planted some seeds on Sunday when I talked to them and said, you guys could be doing something better other than watching basketball all day Sunday.
Definitely. And I mean, you make a good point. They're investing all this money in the booth, and they're paying some kid $15 an hour to sit there. And that kid doesn't care about the company or an engagement. They're like, oh, hand out these stress balls. And you bring up a good point. What are people doing, or what are you guys, do you have anything, ideas that give people good engagement strategies to attack this, or new technologies that sort of help it? I mean,
aside from radio in your booth, of course.
Well, that would be wonderful, and that's a hard sell, let me tell you, because I have tried to sell it, and they look at dollars and they go, whoa, and they can't get past it. And it's always amazing how people want to, what people want to skimp on. But anyway, it's always a challenge to get people. Giveaways are difficult.
Yeah, booth girls. I mean, they do all this crazy stuff.
Yeah,
it's a gimmick. What you want though are qualified people to come by.
Yeah.
If you give away it used to be big a couple of years ago, giving away a disk drive or a thumb drive, USB drive. Well, everybody came and got one, but half the people or 80% of the people who got one weren't even prospects there anyway. They just wanted the freebie. You can see people walking around with bags just stuffed.
They just want
stuff.
Swag, and that's what they do.
Exactly.
And they've got kids, too, so they collect all that for their kids.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, I like swag, too, don't get me wrong. But
there's better ways to spend your money.
Definitely. And so engaging people and maybe having some of the, if you can find people for $15 an hour there, but then once they interact with somebody, then feed them to a senior salesperson or a senior technical person, depending on what's being sold, then that can be a good use of the time there and engage and not just scan their badge because there's a contest and who can scan the most badges.
They want an iPad. I mean, I don't know how many people give out a free iPad thing to get a sign up and get a list of people, but people have walls up when they go to these things. They already expect you, if I go up to this booth, this person's going to try to sell me on something. I got to get around them so I can get the free t-shirt, and it's like it's a game. It really is.
Exactly.
But I've never met a business model that hasn't changed in such a long time, and you'll talk to any company like, well, I need exposure at this event. All my competitors are going to be there, so I need a booth there. And that's as far as they think ahead. They don't think how they're going to the ROI on the
or
event.
The follow up after the event. That's
And how do you measure that? How do you measure that? Well, I gave out 1,500 stress balls, so let me measure that data point right there and see how it brings people back to my business.
Well, I guess I shouldn't mention this, but you'd be interesting to see in my in our warehouse how many giveaways we have that people didn't want to send back to the home office because they were supposed to give them all away. So they say, can you take care of these for me? And I'm not about to throw a bunch of stuff away because I just hate it because they spent, especially when they're personal, they spent money on them. So anyway, we have a lot of swag back in the warehouse.
Definitely. You can build you can put them all into a kiddie pool and you guys can jump in there with the stress balls. But no, you bring up a good point. It's that social, that sort of political ladder with these businesses, that the lower people that are at the trade shows giving out this stuff, the higher ups are making the decisions, and then there's some miscommunication there, and we don't know that. That business model, like a lot of different business models that we talk to people about, have to sort of evolve and change.
Well, there's one. one good thing, or maybe several good things, but there's one good thing about the recent, and I don't know how long you want to go, recent economic downturn, what, since 08, 09, somewhere in there, is that the number of people, the total number of people attending trade shows did go down. Now it's come back up some. But that wasn't necessarily bad because now instead of a company rewarding, okay, we're sending 10 people to Vegas to go to this show because it was a great year, so now they send two people to the show, and one of them's the CEO, and one of them is the CFO. Well, now I'd rather have those two people at the show than the 10 who are running around trying to pick up swag. Well, right. That's right. So, you know, all those kinds of things weigh into the factor. So it's better to have better quality, fewer. But a lot of times, companies don't measure things that way. Hey, more is better, and you got to play the game.
Exactly. Well, you mentioned something earlier in the show, and I just thought it was absolutely great. You were talking about those guys that are going to go build their own thing. They want you to break it down. That's what you're paying you to do. But you're going in there, and you want to educate them, and you want to help them maximize and grow their business. But, you know, that's going to lead to more business for you guys down the road. But you want to educate people and be like, hey, this is a better use of your time. Let us do what we're great at. Don't waste your time doing this and grow your business. I love that you guys do that too. You don't hear that from a lot of people that rent out equipment or set up these kind of trade shows for people. They're just about the numbers game, and you guys seem like you really care, and you're about the companies you work with.
Well, you try to, and people do things the way they do. I mean, one of the analogies I use is, especially if I'm talking to the president of the company or some high executive, I say, you know, who cleans out your trash cans at your office every day? Do you do your own? Well, no. Well, you outsource that. Why wouldn't you outsource something as, and I'll say menial, it's labor.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you outsource that to somebody who can...
You don't do your own taxes.
Well, some people probably do, but they shouldn't.
I probably shouldn't.
I'm sure the CEOs of the company...
Well, that's right. Yeah.
So they have a better use of their time.
Yes.
And saves them a lot of money.
Exactly.
You want to talk to the point of rental versus purchasing?
Well, rental is that's something we do a lot of, again, because of our international scope. A lot of these international companies that are coming to the States have their own booths in Germany, Denmark, Asia, wherever they happen to be. You can't ship it. I mean, they can, but it gets real expensive.
Yeah.
And the first time something gets tied up in customs,
they have
a problem.
Yeah.
So, because a lot of times customs will think the things they're shipping are for sale, and
hold
the
it
documentation
for, yeah.
to say, well, no, you can't sell this in our country. Well, we're not. It's a display unit. Well, you know, customs can be, like any other governmental thing, difficult. So once they learn that, or we put the fear into it's a rental basically, and some of these are pretty substantial booths. Well, that's where we can get into a program because we use a lot of modular, aluminum, plastic, recycled or recyclable kind of materials that can be cut and pasted, if you will. We can have a nice inventory of erector set kind of parts, either plastic or metal erector sets, and you all might be too young to know.
I know erector sets.
We know.
Okay, all right. And I just aged myself all by myself here. But anyway, to have all those parts available so we can cut and paste and put these together in the configuration that they want. And then we can ship it to wherever because it's light. It doesn't cost a whole lot on freight. It saves money on drayage, which if you were to try to explain drayage to somebody from a different country, drayage is taking it from the dock to the booth and then taking it back to the dock for the truck to ship it in and out. And they go, why would you charge for that? And well, somebody got a good deal on that because they're charging you for it. And it can be very expensive. It goes by weight. And if it's oversized, anything more than 8 feet, they would charge a surcharge on that. And so the cost can just go crazy on people. And again, it relates to our turnkey in that we can offer the whole rental program. They know before they come here what it's going to cost them. There's no bad surprises of, well, here's another $3,000 bill coming in.
People like that, too. It's an upfront. It's a transparency that people respect, and it just makes it easier for them to do business and get their numbers straight so they don't have to be worrying about any of those back-end charges.
Right. Again, it can work against us. We're working on a proposal now, and we presented the proposal. It's a company out of Korea, South Korea, the good Korea. Oh, she said Korea.
You can say that. We have no FCC guidelines
okay,
here.
Okay. The good Korea. And they're coming over here, and we presented the proposal to they presented the drawing, and we built it according to what their drawing is, and we gave them the estimate for everything. And they go, can you break the numbers down into line items? And I go, well, yeah, we can, but we do all or nothing. I'm not going to have them pick. We want that feature and that feature, and we'll have you put it up and somebody else take it down, and you know that just doesn't work. So it's kind of funny. You still have an educational process that people want to see what all the details are. But what's the difference if they get
Definitely, it's got to be worth your time as well. And if they're just going to pick and choose, it's like this is a huge time commitment for us that we're not going to be able to do business. But still, that's a transparency that you're reaching before anything happens, and it doesn't happen halfway down the road.
Exactly.
So,
and I'm not so convinced that people do want us to make a profit. Let me tell you, some days they're going, wait a second, can't you cut this some more? And I go, no.
Everyone always wants a deal.
And we have to walk away from deals all the time.
Well, the thing about it, too, is it's hard for people to understand the business and the cost behind it. We see that all the time with what we do, and it's just like people don't understand the cost behind everything, and they're like, well, can't you do this or that? It's not that big of a deal. And it's like, well, actually, yeah, you don't know. Well, I'm paying this person here to do this, and they just spent 15 hours on it for you, and you don't value it as much as that 15 hours is worth. So that's business sometimes.
Yep.
So how have you been seeing? I know there's a huge, especially in America, there's a huge going green trend and stuff. Have you seen that at all in the exhibits that
you're doing? Definitely. It's been going for some time. It comes and goes with popularity. Back 10 years ago, everybody talked green, but they didn't buy it because it cost more.
It costs
20-25% more. Nowadays, we can go green. It doesn't cost anymore. We have nice green soy-based inks. They look just as good. If you didn't tell somebody they were soy-based, they wouldn't know. So, I mean, that's what we're going for. And so, therefore, when it's printed on a banner like you have here, when it's time to throw that banner away, you can do with it is you hope the material behind it is biodegradable at some point, and that the inks don't then leach into the soil or wherever they're going to be. So that's still a big thing. And green, especially with the lightness, because weight can be such a big factor. And nowadays with, again, the plastics and the metals, the aluminums, we don't have that weight factor as much as it used to be. So that's still a good thing. And it saves, because it saves on... it saves on the shipping weight. It saves on the drayage weight. And normally when they're component pieces, they're faster to put together. Yeah. So you save on labor. So it's win-win-win all the way around.
It's small things that matter.
Yes, that's right.
So what's next for you guys? What's coming up in the next couple months and all of 2014? What are you guys doing?
Well, we're doing pretty much some of the same and more of the same. There are a whole lot of shows going on. Again, the economy is not wonderful. But people are still coming out with new things, and there are new businesses coming out, there are new products coming out, and it's just another exciting old time in the trade show business. You know, you name an industry, and there'll be a bunch of shows. Right now, we've got one going on here in Atlanta with it's Modex. It's the Amazon has a huge booth there. I wish I had gotten that one. It's a delivery and that whole part of business of how do you get your product from here to there and how much does it cost and all kinds of technology there. So it's really, really exciting.
Do they have drones? Amazon have the drones?
Well, I didn't see any yet. I'll go to see tomorrow. As a matter of fact, one of the booths we do, they have a little remote-controlled helicopter that they're using to kind of show some things around.
That's funny.
See, that's really cool. I think the drone thing is just a trend. I'm going to throw that out there. I mean, Domino's is doing it, but I don't think it's practical.
No, I don't either. Someone will shoot it down and be like pizza.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there are all kinds of good ideas that don't work out.
Exactly.
That might be one of them.
But it's cool to look it up. So how do people reach out and sign up?
Well, pretty much, we don't do much outgoing marketing. I mean, we do. We have people who make phone calls to prospects and things like that. But it's tough to do that. It's a lot of word of mouth. And having the website optimized so that people, when they do trade show, that vector displays will be popping up somewhere in the top 3 or 4 or 5 on the Google search.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's, the same old, same old. There's no real new way to get a hold of people other than the hard work of making some calls and making some sales.
Definitely. Well, guys, Google vector displays and go check them out, definitely. All right. Well, thanks so much for being on and coming back. So
you.
You can see how we've evolved over the years.
Yep.
All right. Well, next up on Meeting Pros, we have Katie Snyder with Katie Snyder Photography. Welcome to the show. You were sitting there patiently taking notes. You were given signs and scorecards, so we appreciate that.
Thanks so much for having me.
No problem. Well, tell us a little bit about what you do, and tell us about your photography.
Sure. Well, my company is called Katie Snyder Photography. I've been doing this for about 12 years now. We have grown into a business with four main photographers, a handful of videographers, second photographers, as well as a full-time editor on staff and office help as well. So we've got a great team going. We focus mainly on weddings these days, and we do about 30 weddings a year at this point.
Wow. So tell me how you got into it, how you decided to jump into the entrepreneurial world, start your own company, and I'm hoping it's your company, or some weird coincidence that you're working with.
It was so lucky that we found that.
Yeah. But how did you do that? Did you have like another job before this, and you're like, you know what, I can go off and I can do my own thing, or tell me the story.
Yeah, almost exactly like that, actually. I started in college, took my first photography class when I was 18, and thought it would be a fun hobby. Never thought I would do it for a living. I got out of college and worked in the social work industry for a couple of years. And really, really tough industry.
It's very tough.
Lots of respect for people that do that long term. Just decided it wasn't for me. I really, at that point, was doing photography for friends and, you know, for fun. And decided I would love to take the next step and make it a business.
Definitely. So how did that go? Did you just go into it? How did you build up your network? And tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, it's definitely a lot of word of mouth, a lot of support from friends, for sure. At that point, when I first started, I was in a small town in Northeast Tennessee. In 2006, my husband and I moved down to Atlanta. And it's funny that Tim's here because actually when we moved to Atlanta, we did a lot of bridal shows. That's really how the first step we took to get our name out there, because I didn't know anyone in Atlanta. You know, I didn't really know how to go about that.
Mm-hmm.
So from there, I was able to book a lot of business and really get my feet wet and have just been building a network ever since.
All right. Well, Atlanta seems like it's a big market moving from Tennessee, and I love to hear about people that are just go-getters. You're definitely, to be successful, especially owning your own business, especially a photography business, you really have to be out there, and you put yourself out there. You built up sort of a network, and I mean, obviously your work speaks for itself because you have a lot of referral-based things. But what really sets you guys apart? How do you, are you niche-based or...?
Well, we are in the fact that we do focus most of our attention towards weddings. One thing that sets us apart, believe it or not, in our industry, actually the longevity of a wedding photographer is about 5 years. There's a really, really high burnout rate. It's a physically demanding job, and it's really tough at times. So we feel like that really sets us apart, the fact that we've been doing this, you know, close to 12 years full-time for over 7. So we have a lot of experience that we love to, you know, share with our brides and that sort of thing. So we definitely feel like that's an advantage.
Well, and that's a really important day, too. It's you got to get the perfect shots and deal with it. And you're also sort of, you have to deal with the bride also and sort of talk them through a lot of different things. And I'm sure you've seen some crazy, over 12 years, you've seen some crazy things happen where you have to sort of play counselor as well as photographer.
Sure, yeah. You know, and we love to even walk through sort of every step of the process with the brides. We're there. We do a venue walkthrough, so we're there helping them, you know, create the timeline for the day. Because in most cases, this is the first time that they've experienced it, you know.
Hopefully.
Right. And first or second or third, you know. But but they haven't experienced it hundreds of times for sure. So, you know, we can offer suggestions on little things that are going to help. You know, how long should we allow for certain things? And, so we definitely try to help.
Well, definitely. And also, talk to the people out there. I talk to people all the time, and I'm going through the process right now of going through wedding planning with my fiance. But people don't realize how important a photographer is. Sometimes that's the last thing on their list. They get everything else done, and they're like, "Oh well, my cousin's brother's son. He does photography.
He's got a pretty nice camera.
Yeah, he can take pictures at my wedding." And they don't. Again, we were talking about value earlier. They don't always see the value in the pictures, but that's really one of the most valuable parts.
Sure. I mean, we definitely believe so. And of course, I do feel a little biased trying to convince people of that. I read something the other day that said, you know, if you think about it, this is what people are grabbing when they run out of a house that's on fire. They're grabbing their wedding photos. And so it is very important. Sure, everybody has a camera these days. There's, you know, a lot of amateurists out there. And we support that. You know, part of what I do, I'm educating hobbyists out there. But when it comes to your wedding photos, you definitely want to hire a professional.
Well, and that's what's left over after your wedding. Your wedding cake's going to get bad. The dress, moss might eat it. I don't know. You only can wear it once.
Sure.
So the photos are what's left there.
Definitely.
So tell me a little bit about, you talked about you're sort of a one-stop shop. You guys have an editor in there for the photos, so you don't have to ship anything off. So I'm sure that makes your timetable a lot better for getting photos back to people, which is huge. And you also said you have a videographer on staff, right?
Yes, we have a couple videographers. It works really well. Again, a lot of people maybe haven't experienced this, so they don't know this, but if you hire two different companies, a photographer and a videographer, there's essentially two timelines. So it might be that the photographer comes in for 10 minutes and then the videographer has to come in and get the same shot. So it's just kind of taking up a lot of your time on that wedding day. The way we do it is we're working off the same timeline. We're working side by side and creating those shots at the same time. And videography, for a lot of brides, it's sort of an afterthought. It's something, you know, 10 years ago, people would just set a camera up on a tripod in the back and
just capture, let it run.
Probably capture never vows. Watch it. Yeah. Sure. Mm-hmm. You know, a two-hour snooze fest, basically, you're not going to watch that. But the way we do it is it's an extension of photography. It's just capturing those fluid movements a little more. We set it to music. It's created to really watch over and over, share it on social media. It's a nice little keepsake for sure.
Well, definitely. Speaking of social media, what are you guys really doing in that realm? Because that's become a really integral part of a lot of different businesses.
Definitely. Well, it's certainly helped us a lot with building our network. We're on Facebook, of course, Twitter, Instagram is great for photographers. It's a lot of fun. We're getting onto Pinterest and also, of course, we've got our blog that we try to contribute to regularly as well.
All right.
Kevin just got on Pinterest.
I did. I've been doing a lot of cooking through Pinterest. My fiance loves it, so.
Yeah, it's great for finding recipes.
Yes, and also sharing all her wedding boards with me.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Yeah. You guys should follow me. I've got a ton of great stuff on there for...
Definitely.
Great.
I'm going to do that right after this show. So earlier you mentioned you do some kind of teaching.
Yes.
So do you do it with a specific school or is it just people you find off the street? You're like, hey, you're taking pictures of stuff. Let me mentor you.
Well, I guess the way it came about is I was getting a lot of questions, just everything you can imagine. What kind of camera should I buy? How do I use my camera? I've got a nice camera. I can't take a picture of my child that's not blurry. Like, what am I doing wrong? So I really took that and I developed a workshop. It's an introduction to DSLR. So basically, anybody that has a nice camera can come. We do about 8 of those a year. And it's gone really well so far. It's really a hands-on approach. I can show people how to use their manual settings, how to take pictures of their really hyper kids that are bouncing around and get them, you know, where they're not blurry. So it's aimed towards hobbyists, moms, and even we also have some professionals starting out that just need to hone those skills a little bit more.
Wow. All right. So what advice would you give to someone out there that wants to get into this or see if they actually want to do this? Because I know there's a lot of for-profit schools out there that are really bankrupting kids and they sell them on this. Well, you can become a photographer. We have a 90% job. People get jobs out of this school and they spend $150,000. They have a nice camera. They've learned some things, but at the same time, now they can't get jobs.
It's true. Well, to be an entrepreneur in any sense, you know, I really encourage people to learn the business side of things. You know, I did study photography in college. In no way did that prepare me to run my own business. One of the photographers that works for me has a degree in business, and she said, really, we weren't talking about owning a small business at all. We were talking about big, you know, corporate business. So there's a lot of information out on the web, which is great. You can learn about marketing, social media, you know, anything you're looking for, and even the technical side of things. You know, YouTube is great for learning how to use your camera and learning how to edit. And, you know, there's really nothing that you would need to learn that's not out there if you just work hard enough.
Definitely. All right. Well, what's next with you guys? What are you guys seeing for the future?
Well, more of the same. Definitely. We're gearing up for a very busy spring. Lots of spring weddings in the works and that we're excited about. And, just moving forward.
All right. Well, do you want any more? Do you have capacity for any more weddings to come on? Do you want more people to come work for you? What can we help with?
Absolutely. Well, we always need more clients. So
need more talent, more clients.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. So you can check out our website. It's katiesnyder.com. Really simple.
Right.
And we would love to chat with you.
Are your classes available on there too? Do you have a listing of the?
Yes, there's definitely information on there.
Excellent. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on, Katie.
Thanks for having me.
Well, another great show, Jessica. You're always booking the best guests.
Thanks, Kevin.
And thank you to Ruby for being our mascot of the show. So.
Yeah.
And how's your Adventurepreneurs group going on?
It's good. It's good. It's kind of I've been preoccupied, so my involvement has been a bit lesser, but it's
it runs on its own.
Yeah, it's doing its thing. It's good.
Perfect. All right. Well, this is Kevin Finn for Jessica Park and our guest today, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Meeting Pros.